Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, July 9th. Texas officials say restoring electricity will take days after Beryl knocked out power to millions. Texas officials say restoring electricity will take days after Beryl came ashore Monday as a Category 1 hurricane and knocked out power to nearly 3 million homes and businesses. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who is acting governor while Governor Greg Abbott is out of the country, said CenterPoint Energy was bringing in thousands of additional workers to help get the lights turned back on quicker. He said the storm toppled 10 transmission lines and that many of the outages were caused by fallen trees. Beryl sped across the Texas coast on Monday, unleashing heavy rains that prompted dozens of high water rescues. The fast-moving tempest threatened to carve a harsh path over several more states in coming days. At least three people were killed as Beryl moved through Texas. Within hours after Beryl swept ashore as a Category 1 hurricane, it had weakened into a tropical storm. Far less powerful than the Category 5 behemoth that tore a deadly path of destruction through parts of Mexico and the Caribbean last week. But the winds and the rains of the fast-moving storm were still powerful enough to knock down hundreds of trees that had already been teetering in water-saturated earth and to strand dozens of cars on flooded roadways. At least two people were killed when trees fell on homes, and the National Hurricane Center said damaging winds and flash flooding would continue as Beryl pushed inland. A third person, a civilian employee for the Houston Police Department, was killed when he was trapped in floodwaters under a highway overpass. Houston Mayor John Whitmire said, "There were no immediate reports of widespread structural damage, however. More than 2.2 million homes and businesses were without power around Houston, the nation's fourth largest city, after Beryl blew through, according to the CenterPoint Energy utility. For many, it was an all-too-familiar experience. Powerful storms had just ripped through the area in May, killing eight people, leaving nearly 1 million without power and flooding numerous streets. Residents without power after Beryl were doing their best. We haven't really slept," said Eva Costianzo as she gazed at a large tree that had fallen across electric lines in her neighborhood in the Houston suburb of Rosenberg. Costancio, 67, said she had already been without power for several hours and worried that food in her refrigerator would be spoiled. "We are struggling to have food, and losing that food would be difficult," she said. Houston and Harris County officials said power crews would be sent into the area to restore service as quickly as possible. An urgent priority for homes also left without air conditioning in the middle of summer. Temperatures, which had cooled slightly with the storm, were expected to reach into the 90s as early as Tuesday. "While these efforts are full steam ahead, we want residents to know and prepare for a possible multi-day power outage," Galveston City officials said on Facebook. "The estimated timeline is anywhere from 72 hours to 2 weeks in parts of the island." Beryl's rains pounded Houston and other areas of the coast on Monday, reclosing streets in neighborhoods that had already been washed out by previous storms. Television stations on Monday broadcast the dramatic rescue of a man who had climbed to the roof of his pickup truck after it got trapped in fast-moving waters. Emergency crews used an extension ladder from a fire truck to drop him a life preserver and a tether before moving him to dry land. Houston officials reported at least 25 water rescues by Monday afternoon, mostly for people with vehicles stuck in floodwaters. First responders are putting their lives at risk. That's what they're trained for. It's working, Houston Mayor John Whitmire said. Javier Mejia was one of about 20 people who gathered near the pickup truck rescue site to take pictures of other submerged vehicles sitting on the flooded highway. If you don't have a way through, you're going to get stuck like that, Mejia said. Having experienced previous storms in Houston, Mejia stocked up on food and water before Beryl hit, but forgot gas for his portable generator. He planned to spend the day looking for some. I don't want it to go bad, he said of the food, adding that if he can't find gas, we can just fire up the grill. Many streets and neighborhoods throughout Houston were littered with fallen branches and other debris. The buzz of chainsaws filled the air Monday afternoon as residents set to work chopping up knocked down trees and big branches that had blocked streets and sidewalks. Two people were killed after trees fell on their houses, a man in the Houston suburb of Humble and a woman in Harris County, authorities said. Hundreds of trees fell in the county, crushing vehicles and damaging homes, said Precinct 4 County Constable Mark Herman. Patrick warned that flooding could last for days as rains continued to fall on already saturated ground. This is not a one-day event, he said. President Joe Biden was getting regular updates on the storm after it made landfall, the White House said. The U.S. Coast Guard and FEMA had prepared search and rescue teams, and FEMA collected bottled water, meals, tarps, and electric generators in case they were needed. Several companies with refineries or industrial plants in the area reported that the power disruptions necessitated the flaring of gases at the facilities. Marathon Petroleum Corporation said it conducted a safe combustion of excess gases at its Galveston Bay refinery in Texas City, but did not provide information on the amount of gas flared or how long it would continue. Formosa Plastics Corporation and Freeport LNG also reported flaring related to Beryl, according to the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Companies have 24 hours to share emissions data after the flaring stops, a representative from the TCEQ said in an email. The earliest storm to develop into a Category 5 hurricane in the Atlantic, Beryl caused at least 11 deaths as it passed through the Caribbean on its way to Texas. The storm ripped off doors, windows, and roofs with devastating winds and storm surge fueled by the Atlantic's record warmth. Three times during the week, Beryl gained 35 miles per hour in wind speed in 24 hours or less, the official Weather Service definition of rapid intensification. Beryl's explosive growth into an unprecedented early whopper of a storm indicates the hot water of the Atlantic and Caribbean and what the Atlantic hurricane belt can expect for the rest of the storm season, experts said. In Jamaica, officials said Monday that island residents will have to contend with food shortages after Beryl destroyed over $6.4 million in crops and supporting infrastructure. In Louisiana, heavy bands of rain were expected all day Monday, and the risk is going to be for the heavy rainfall and potential for flash flooding, National Weather Service meteorologist Donald Jones said in a Monday morning Facebook Live briefing. Meteorologists in Louisiana are watching for lingering rain bands, which could drop copious amounts of rain wherever they materialize, as well as quick spin-up tornadoes, said Donald Jones, a National Weather Service meteorologist in Lake Charles, Louisiana. "It's just a matter of exactly where that's going to be," Jones said. "That's very difficult to predict more than maybe an hour or so in advance." Beryl was forecast to bring more strong rains and winds into additional states over the coming days. One of those, Missouri, was already dealing with a wet summer. Heavy rains unrelated to the storm prompted several water rescues around the city of Columbia, where rivers and creeks were already high ahead of Beryl's expected arrival on Tuesday. Museum releases economic impact results. The Ellen Noel Art Museum Monday released the results of an updated study conducted by the Perryman Group that announced the increased economic benefits of the museum's current expansion project and its impact on Odessa and the surrounding area in West Texas. Entitled "Enhancing the Arts and Opportunities in the Permian Basin," this new study, conducted in May for 2024, reveals greatly enhanced benefits to the area. Upon completion of the current expansion and renovation of the museum, notable investments will have been made during the construction stage of the project. In addition, ongoing benefits would be generated by the expanded operations of the museum, as well as increased visits by both residents and out-of-area visitors. The study estimates that the construction renovation stage would lead to an increase in business activity in the Odessa area of more than $17 million in output gross product and 163 job years by project workers. That's an increase from $4.9 million in gross product and 104 jobs since the original study was done in March of 2021. Ray Perryman, president and CEO of the Perryman Group based in Waco, said in a news release, "Ongoing annual benefits of the expansion from incremental operations and tourism include an estimated $17.6 million in gross product and 199 jobs when multiplier effects are considered," Perryman added. "These new projections are up from $11.8 million and 155 jobs, respectively, compared to original study projections." Ellen Noel Art Museum Executive Director Sheila Perry said in the release she is thrilled with the progress being made on the renovation project and these new impact figures on the local economy. "We are making wonderful progress each day in realizing our vision for this museum and the arts community as a whole here in the Permian Basin. I encourage all West Texans to drive by the museum and see the improvements for themselves. And we are still accepting both corporate and individual donations to help us complete the project," Perryman said. "Donations toward the completion of the renovation project can be made on the museum's website, noelartmuseum.org, by contacting Alondra Tamez at 432-550-9696, extension 210. Or emailing manager@noelartmuseum.org. Free bulk item drop-off event. A free bulk item drop-off event is scheduled 8 a.m. to noon Saturday at Ector Junior High, 809 West Clements Street, City of Odessa. Solid waste will be set up in the east parking lot. What can you bring? Bulk: furniture, appliances, water heaters, hot tubs, above-ground pools, exercise equipment, trampolines, etc. Outdoor equipment as long as fuel, oil, and batteries are removed. String trimmers, mowers, leaf blowers, generators, edgers, tillers, barbecue pits, patio furniture, home office electronics, microwaves, cables, wires, televisions, crock pots, space heaters, etc. Construction, demolition debris, paint, chemicals, tires, and tree limbs will not be accepted. Refrigerators, compressors, and freezers will not be accepted unless the Freon is removed. Future bulk item drop-off events are scheduled to take place August 3rd at Floyd Gwynn Park, South Parking Lot, and September 7th at the Household Hazardous Waste Facility, 814 West 42nd Street. President Joe Biden to speak in Austin as Republican convention kicks off in Milwaukee. President Joe Biden will deliver remarks at Austin's Lyndon Baines Johnson Presidential Library on July 15th to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, a White House official confirmed on Sunday. The visit is the first of three stops in 3 days, starting in Austin, then on to Las Vegas, where Biden will speak at the 115th NAACP National Convention on July 16th, and then the following day at the INDOS U.S. Annual Conference, described as one of the largest gatherings of Latinos in the country. His appearance in Austin coincides with the opening day of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, where Republicans will discuss their party platform and formally nominate Trump. The trips to Texas and Nevada follow Biden's poor debate performance against former President Donald Trump on June 27th. The president's fumbles led some congressional Democrats, starting with U.S. Representative Lloyd Doggett, Democrat, Austin, to call on Biden to withdraw from the race for president. Doggett was not immediately available on Sunday to comment on Biden's upcoming visit to Texas. The LBJ Presidential Library has not yet released a statement about the president's visit, but has confirmed the event. On July 2, 1964, Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law, which barred discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, or national origin. Biden plans to discuss his administration's progress advancing civil rights and his vision to ensure the promise of America for all communities, according to the White House staff. In 2014, U.S. Presidents Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and Jimmy Carter visited Austin for a 3-day summit commemorating the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Biden's remarks at the NAACP National Convention in Las Vegas will focus on his administration's efforts to advance racial justice, according to a statement from the White House. Growing numbers of Democrats, including in Texas, have expressed concern that Biden could cost them their seats in November. The president has engaged in a series of campaign stops to try to quell Democrats' concerns about whether Biden is fit for another term in office. Biden would be 86 by the end of a second term. Voices of Veterans. Private First Class Buster Lee Bailey shares his story of service in the U.S. Army Air Force. Texas Land Commissioner and Veterans Land Board VLB Chairwoman Don Buckingham, M.D., is proud to introduce the next installment of the series highlighting the VLB's Voice of Veterans Oral History Program. In this episode, we hear the story of Private First Class PFC Buster Lee Bailey. Bailey was born and raised in Dallas, Texas. He enlisted in the U.S. Army Air Forces in 1946 and attended boot camp at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas. After training to become a radio operator, he was shipped out to Hawaii. He would track the flight of distressed planes to ensure they arrived at their intended bays safely. On July 8, 1947, he was in a C-46 transport plane when an accident occurred. During takeoff at Palmyra Island, about 100 miles south of Hawaii, the engine threw the propellers and they came through the plane, and one of them, if it had been 6 inches to one side, it'd have missed me. 6 inches to the other side, it'd have killed me. Bailey lost his right hand and right leg in the crash. He only became emotional when discussing his mother finding out about the accident. When asked what message he would like to leave for future generations, he said, "Watch out," and began to laugh, showing a bit of the attitude that helped him through a terrible ordeal. Afterward, he said earnestly, "Keep America free, strong, and free." Estranged husband accused of ramming wife's SUV. An Odessa man was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon Saturday morning after admitting to ramming his estranged wife's car with his. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a woman told police she was leaving her residence for work when she saw her estranged husband, Christopher Iglesias, following her around 9:30 a.m. She told officers she was continuing on her way when he intentionally rammed the passenger side of her 2020 Lincoln SUV with his Nissan Sentra, causing his vehicle to stall. When officers arrived at the intersection of Fitch Avenue and Laredo Drive, they found Iglesias and the Nissan, the report stated. A short time later, Iglesias' estranged wife pulled up. According to the report, Iglesias had to be told multiple times to stay by his vehicle, and he kept yelling at his estranged wife. Iglesias told officials he went to his ex's apartment looking for her and admitted to striking her vehicle with his. The report stated he was booked into the Ector County Jail on the second-degree felony of aggravated assault family violence with a deadly weapon. He was released Monday after posting a surety bond of $30,000. Chevron commits $100,000 to New Mexico wildfire relief and recovery efforts. Chevron USA Incorporated on Monday announced a donation of $100,000 to support relief and recovery efforts in response to the South Fork Fire and the Salt Fire near the village of Ruidosa and the Mescalero Apache Reservation in south-central New Mexico. Through our legacy companies, Chevron has been a proud community partner in New Mexico for more than 100 years. Daryl Carriger, manager of Chevron's Delaware Basin operations in New Mexico, said in a news release, "Chevron is committed to supporting first responders, tribal and local governments, and nonprofit organizations as they work to contain these fires and address impacts across Lincoln and Otero counties. The Greatest Need Impact Fund for Lincoln and Otero counties, which is held within the Community Foundation of Southern New Mexico, will receive a $75,000 donation. The Mescalero Apache Tribe, a federally recognized tribal government, will receive a $25,000 donation. On behalf of the Mescalero Apache Tribe, I extend our heartfelt gratitude to Chevron for their generous donation. This contribution will directly support our tribe and its members during these challenging times of fires and flooding on the reservation," Thora Padilla, President, Mescalero Apache Tribe, said in the release. "With evacuations, shelters set up at the Inn of the Mountain Gods and our local community centers and volunteers tirelessly organizing and distributing essential supplies, Chevron's support is invaluable. Chevron's assistance helps us maintain our resilience and care for our community despite economic impacts and the disruptions Thank you for standing with us and aiding in our relief efforts. The Community Foundation of Southern New Mexico is honored to receive the support of Chevron to care for our friends and neighbors throughout Lincoln and Otero counties, said Tara V. Winter, President and CEO, Community Foundation of Southern New Mexico. Funding will aid residents affected by the fire while focusing on emerging and long-term economic revitalization. We are humbled by the support from Chevron and grateful for their incredible generosity. Additionally, Chevron will match qualifying donations to wildfire relief efforts made by employees and retirees, as well as provide financial contributions to nonprofit organizations where employees volunteer. Devon Energy buys Grayson Mill Energy's Williston Basin business in $5 billion cash and stock deal. Devon Energy is buying Grayson Mill Energy's Williston Basin business in a cash and stock deal valued at $5 billion as consolidation in the oil and gas sector ramps up. The transaction includes $3.25 billion in cash and $1.75 billion in stock. Grayson Mill Energy, based in Houston, is an oil and gas exploration company that received an initial investment from private equity firm EnCap Investments in 2016. The firm appears to be stepping back from energy sector as it sells off assets. Last month, EnCap-backed XCL Resources sold its Uinta Basin oil and gas assets to SM Energy Company and Northern Oil and Gas in a transaction totaling $2.55 billion. EnCap had another deal in June as well, selling some assets to Matador Resources for nearly $2 billion. Devon said Monday that the deal significantly expands its position in the Williston Basin with the addition of 307,000 net acres. The basin spans part of Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Canada. The company anticipates that production from the acquired properties will be maintained at approximately 100,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day next year. The deal is targeted to close by the end of the third quarter. Devon said its board will expand its buyback authorization by 67% to $5 billion through the middle of 2026. The company also anticipates the deal adding to its dividend payout beginning next year. Shares of Devon Energy Corporation based in Oklahoma City fell more than 2.5% Monday. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Read to Felix for children of all ages from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays in the third floor children's department. Felix is a therapy dog that loves to be read to. Visit tinyurl.com/23rkc4du. West Texas pastor who used illegal donations from churches to campaign for office is fined $3,500. A West Texas pastor who used his parish's resources to campaign for office and several pastors from other churches who donated to him were fined after the state's Ethics Commission determined that each violated election law. The fines, some of which were issued last month, are the latest sanctions from the commission following reporting from ProPublica and the Texas Tribune, which revealed that three churches donated to the campaign of Scott Beard, founding pastor at Fountain Gate Fellowship Church, despite state and federal prohibitions on such activity. Beard, who was fined $3,500, showed a lack of good faith in accepting the donations and in posting campaign signs on church property from his unsuccessful Abilene City Council race, despite the commission's warnings against doing so, it found, because the respondent committed extensive corporate contribution violations in defiance of the applicable law, a substantial penalty is required. The commission wrote about Beard. He did not respond to a request for comment. The commission separately fined the pastor at Hope for Life Church, Bruce Tenser, $200. Tenser purchased a ticket to Beard's fundraising dinner with funds from the parish, also known as Hope Chapel Foursquare Church. He told the commission the money was drawn from a special church fund set aside for his personal use. Those actions come after the Ethics Commission on December 21, 2023, ordered Dewey Hall, pastor of Fountain Gate Merkle Church, to pay $400 for donating from church coffers to Beard's campaign. In an interview, Hall said he does not believe in the separation of church and state, but that his church would not donate to a political candidate again. No fines appear on the commission's website again related to Remnant Church, the third parish, to give Beard campaign money. Remnant representatives did not respond to a request for comment. Kristen Postel, an Abilene attorney who filed a complaint with the commission about Beard's actions, said she was pleased with the fines levied against him. Given the severity of his actions, she believed the churches should pay less than him, but Postel said such low fines are not sufficient deterrence for violators. I don't think anybody is going to be super cautious about following the rules unless there is a real financial burden to breaking them, Postel said. Under state law, violations are punishable by up to $5,000 or triple the amount at issue, whichever is greater, and a third-degree felony charge. No criminal charges were brought in these cases. J.R. Johnson, the commission's executive director, declined to comment and did not answer questions about whether the fines were sufficient. Roger Borgelt, an Austin attorney who provides ethics advice to political candidates, said the stigma of being found in violation of the law is often a bigger deterrent than the fines themselves. The Ethics Commission, in terms of its practical function as a deterrent, has been more to provide campaign fodder than anything else, he said. It's unclear if Beard or the churches will face any additional sanctions. Abilene residents filed complaints with the IRS accusing Beard's church of illegally campaigning. An IRS spokesperson declined to comment, saying the federal law prohibits the agency from confirming or denying investigations. The federal agency can strip churches of their tax-exempt status for violating a federal law banning all nonprofits from engaging in political activity, but there has been only one public example of such a revocation. Website ranks TSTC's nursing program among best in Texas, Sweetwater. Texas State Technical College is among the best two-year colleges for nursing in the state, according to niche.com. The website based its rankings on analysis of statistics from the U.S. Department of Education and student reviews. Adrian Reyes, TSTC's LVN to RN transition nursing program team, led in Harlingen, said the ranking is important to TSTC. This accolade will make our program shine when prospective students search for options on where to study nursing, she said in a news release. This demonstrates that students are satisfied with the preparation we provide for their first job as a registered nurse. The hands-on opportunities we provide in our state-of-the-art labs and clinicals at area hospitals has been a major contributor. Wendy Proctor, an instructor at the Sweetwater campus, said the ranking will be helpful in another area. "We will be able to use this ranking to help our recruiting efforts in West Texas," she said in the release. "We were excited that a school of our size was among the top in the state." Adrian Hernandez, who is in his third semester of studying for an Associate of Applied Science degree, said the ranking is a reflection of the instructor's dedication to preparing students for the next phases of their careers. "The instructors instill what it means to be a leader," he said. "They emphasize giving individualized care to every patient and being cognizant of the family's needs. That's why so many employers recognize the TSTC name, because of the quality nurses who graduate from here." Benita Sparrow graduated from the program earlier this year. "I always had questions when we were not on campus. The instructors never hesitated to jump on a call or answer a chat," she said. "They wanted me to be successful as a registered nurse." TSTC offers an Associate of Applied Science degree in nursing at its Harlingen and Sweetwater campuses. A vocational nursing certificate of completion is offered at the Breckenridge, Harlingen, and Sweetwater campuses. Registration for TSTC's fall semester is underway. Join the 2024 Readathon fundraiser. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, PBALC, announced their annual Readathon fundraiser on Monday. Running from July through September 30th, this program is a fantastic opportunity to support their adult literacy program while helping their students enhance their reading skills. Dedicated PBALC students have pledged to read at least 10 books by the end of September, creating a lasting legacy of literacy and learning. Sponsors will be paired with a participating student and will receive updates on their students' progress throughout the readathon. Sponsors are welcome to support multiple students if they choose. By sponsoring a student, you'll help PBALC bridge their funding gap, ensuring that their students can continue to improve their lives through literacy. This event is truly a win-win, benefiting both students and supporters. Join in celebrating reading and supporting PBALC's mission to enhance literacy for everyone. Early registration is open for individuals, teams, and families. Prizes will be awarded to the top reading and fundraising individual and teams. Set up your Readathon profile today at https://bit.ly/2024PBALC Readathon. PBALC is offering both individual and corporate sponsorship opportunities. For more information about sponsorship opportunities, please contact Alba Austin at aaustin@pbalc.org or call 432-682-9693. General donations for PBALC are welcome at https://pbalc.org/donate. Alamo plans to join New Tech Network. Starting next fall, Alamo STEAM Academy will become part of the New Tech Network, just like George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa. Principal Alicia Sessions hopes the move will draw more attention to Alamo, which she says is one of the hidden gems in Ector County ISD. Sessions is just finishing her second year as principal at Alamo. She was assistant principal for 3 years before that. She said they had been working for the past year and a half to 2 years on rebranding Alamo because they would consistently be third choice when it came to selecting a choice school with its STEM program. With the passage of the bond, NewTek is going to be adding middle school students. Sessions and other district officials had conversations about joining the NewTek network, and everyone was excited. Ector County Independent School District opened NewTek Odessa in 2011. It's an all-academic college prep high school aimed at equipping students with 21st century skills, its website said. Through the use of technology, project-based learning, and a small learning environment, students who attend NTO will graduate with the necessary skills to compete in a global economy. While attending NewTek Odessa, students fulfill state requirements for recommending or distinguished achievement, as well as earn college credit through NTO's partnership with local universities and colleges. In addition, students are provided the opportunity to explore potential career opportunities through internships with local businesses and civic organizations. Sessions said she reached out to contacts and set the ball rolling last fall. Ultimately, we knew we were up against the school of choice window opening because it opens December 1st. To be able to make all the changes that we wanted to make before the lottery and before parents had the opportunity to apply, Sessions said. We weren't really able to do all the things we wanted to do with that just because the contracts hadn't been signed with NTN and just different things. When I have been having parent orientations for school choice, we expressed that we were going to PBL. We didn't give it an NTN NewTek network name. We just talked about project-based learning with the parents that were coming for these orientations and expressed that we would be doing that work at our lower grade levels initially, she added. Sessions, an instructional coach, and two teachers made a site visit to the NewTek network school in Leander in November 2023. We were able to do some training there with them and to do a site visit with them. We walked their campus. We saw project-based learning in action there, and then we came back and we had some staff meetings. We had some parent meetings just to make sure that the staff was on board, and it was an interest for parents, Sessions said. With the passage of the bond in November 2023, it opened the door for a choice middle school at NewTek Odessa. It created the opportunity to have a very strong pathway for kiddos to be immersed in project-based learning through NTN from elementary all the way up to high school, Sessions said.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter-Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, July 6th, 2024. Rig count rises for first time in 7 weeks. Drilling activity broke its downward trend, rising for the first time in 7 weeks, but still hovering near three-year lows. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count, it has issued weekly for 70 years, rose 4 rigs to 585. Still 95 rigs, or 14% below the 680 rigs active across the nation last July. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil was unchanged at 479, the lowest level since December 2021, and 61 rigs below the 540 counted last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose 4 rigs to 101, 34 fewer rigs than the 135 reported a year ago. Texas edged 1 rig higher to report 278 rigs at work statewide, down 59 rigs from 337 a year ago. New Mexico was unchanged at 107 rigs. Louisiana, 3, joined Texas as the other producing state to see an increase, while all other producing states were unchanged. The Permian Basin held steady at 305 rigs, down 37 rigs from 342 last year. The Eagle Ford was the only major producing basin to see a change, adding 2 rigs for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian Basin, reporting 52 rigs for a second consecutive week. Lee County, New Mexico, was close behind, continuing to report 51 rigs across the county. Martin County was up one rig for 31, while Reeves County reported 24 rigs for a second week. Loving County again reported 22 rigs. Midland County gained a rig to have 19 rigs at work within county lines. Reagan and Upton counties each reported 15 rigs, unchanged for Reagan and down one rig for Upton. Howard County had 12 rigs, down one for the week. Glasscock County had 10 rigs for a second week. Energy Dedicated Software, as a service firm in Barra, said its U.S. rig count for the week ended June 28th sank 16 rigs to 615 from 631 the previous week. That's 113 rigs, or 16% below the 728 counted last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude fell 6 to 184 rigs and is 256 rigs, or 58% below the 440 drilling for oil the previous June. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas dropped 2 rigs to 104 and is 83 rigs, or 44% below the 187 reported last year. ExxonMobil continues to top the list of top 10 producers by rig count with 39 rigs, unchanged for the week. ConocoPhillips was second with 32 rigs, also unchanged, and EOG Resources was third with 28 rigs, also unchanged. Enverus Permian Basin rig count fell by 5 to 303 for the week ended June 28th, and is 50 rigs, or 15%, below the 353 counted last year. The most active play, the Delaware, added one rig for 161, 31 rigs, or 16%, below the 192 seen last year. The Midland Basin fell by 3 rigs to 121, 14 rigs, or 10% below the 135 seen last year. In terms of trailing 30-day drilling permits, Enverus said the Permian had 846 permits for the week ended June 14th, up from 783 the previous week and well above the 693 counted last June. Enverus said there were 104 frac crews at work in the Permian as of June 14th, up from 94 the previous week, but down from 141 a year ago. Crude prices post fourth weekly increase. Hurricane Beryl, bearing down on the Gulf of Mexico and its oil and gas infrastructure, were outweighed by the possibility of a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, leading to more supplies from the Middle East. Still, West Texas Intermediate posted a 2.1% increase for the week, marking its fourth consecutive weekly gain. West Texas Intermediate rose 2 of 4 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange. WTI opened a holiday-shortened trading week by jumping $1.84 and another $1.07 rise Wednesday before trading halted for the 4th of July holiday. Prices ended the week falling 72 cents to close at $83.16, up from $81.54 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed the week at $79.64, according to Plains All American. Hot temperatures did little to support natural gas futures, which fell all 4 trading days on the NYMEX. Henry Hub futures sank 12.3 cents to open the trading week and ended the week falling 10 cents to close at $2.319 per MCF, down from $2.601 at last Friday's close. Rystad Energy Global Market Analyst Claudio Galimberti wrote that strong market fundamentals have been supporting oil prices, citing lower exports from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Russia. That's in conjunction with higher refinery runs for peak summer demand. While there may be some profit-taking, Galimberti said prices continue to gain strength from the possibility of U.S. interest rate cuts and continued geopolitical risks. Quote, looking at the fundamentals, we have significantly lowered our forecast for U.S. oil production from August onwards, end quote, Galimberti wrote. Quote, these adjustments reflect a downturn in Permian oil output due to ongoing low activity and consolidation through mergers and acquisitions. Quote, most changes are concentrated on the Texas side, while New Mexico has shown resilience, although April data reflects a decline in monthly figures, averaging a fall of approximately 80,000 barrels per day. Quote, overall, the downward adjustment from August 2024 through December 2025 averages about 200,000 barrels per day, end quote. Jack Weeksel, Senior Director at East Daily Analytics, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that it appears natural gas storage came in right around market consensus at 32 billion cubic feet of injection for the previous week, quote, which is roughly half the five-year average and is bearish, end quote. Also bearish for prices was the report that total inventories were revised up to over 3.1 trillion cubic feet for the week prior. Quote, prompt month prices for August have fallen all week and now sit below $2.50, partly on bearish storage and slightly less heat in the 6 to 15 day forecast. It's still going to be hot, just a little less hot than the market thought last week, end quote, he wrote. Michael Banschbach, gas, crude, and NGL marketing consultant, reported that Waha prices, quote, inexplicably, end quote, traded at negative $4 per MMBTU for July 4th through July 8th. He also reported that Waha prices for July 9th through July 31st was seeing a bid ask of negative 80 cents to negative $1.20, which he said was again a significant spread. Midland Clinic offers sports and daycare physicals in July. Community Children's Clinic is offering sports and daycare physicals to Midland children. From Monday, July 8th until Thursday, July 11th, residents can bring a parent identification, $20 cash, and proof of Midland residency, such as an electric bill, car insurance, or child school enrollment, from 8 to 11:30 a.m. Quote, we serve children between the ages of 7 months and 18 years old who are still enrolled in school in Midland County, end quote, the clinic said on its website. Quote, the mission of the Community Children's Clinic is to provide compassionate, affordable medical care for sick children living in Midland County, end quote. Regarding qualifications for care, Community Children's Clinic provides care for families who do not have insurance, are underinsured, or low-income families. The clinic is not a Medicaid provider. Community Children's Clinic is located at 1101 East Front Street. While walk-ins are welcome at the clinic for the sports and daycare physicals, appointments are recommended. Residents can call 432-686-8593 for more information or visit the clinic's website at https://www.communitychildrensclinic.org. Celebrate George W. Bush's 78th birthday with cake. The Bush Family Home State Historic Site will celebrate George W. Bush's birthday with cake on Saturday. In June, the site held a celebration of what would have been George H.W. Bush's 100th birthday. Festivities included hamburgers, live music, and a crazy sock competition. Saturday morning brings a celebration of the 43rd president's birthday with free cake that will be served while supplies last. In 1946, three U.S. presidents were born, and it is the only year that this has happened. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Donald Trump were all born that year. George W. Bush turns 78 this year. Quote, during the long July 4th weekend, it will be great to celebrate the 78th birthday of a hometown president, end quote, said site manager Troy Gray. Quote, we will have cake and offer tours of the home, end quote. George W. Bush moved to West Texas in 1948 and lived in the now historic home from 1951 to 1955. Although he moved from Midland, he returned to Tall City in the 1970s. Quote, in Midland, Texas, where I grew up, the town motto was, the sky's the limit, and we believed it, end quote, said George W. Bush during a speech in 2000. The Bush family home will also display photos and memories of the family on a table. Attendees will be able to tour the home until the last tour starts at 4:15 p.m. The historic site will be open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tours will be at the price of regular admission. Tickets cost $5 for adults, $3 for seniors, and $2 for kids 6 to 17. From the Soil with Soul, Anderson Farm Market sells produce from around West Texas. Take a drive down Wadley Avenue near Claydesta most days, and you're sure to see a humble farm stand selling fresh produce. While Anderson Farm Market is a mom-and-pop shop in the truest sense, it's really an operation made up of families helping families. Chad and Jessica Anderson have called West Texas home for the past 6 years. What drew them here to the edge of the desert is a certain specialization ripe for this part of the country. No, not oil and gas, watermelons. Chad is a fourth-generation watermelon farmer from Tennessee. Quote, watermelons love sandy soil, and the heat and dry weather make them especially good and sweet out here, end quote, he said. Quote, I've grown them all my life, end quote. Chad and Jessica, a married couple who started as high school sweethearts, initially moved to Andrews but eventually settled in Midland. They work the soil on a few acres of land at their farm off State Highway 349, and watermelons aren't all they grow. Quote, this season we're also growing okra and summer squash, end quote, Jessica said. Quote, we're about to plant a late crop of cantaloupe and pumpkin, end quote. In years past, the Andersons have grown zucchini, pickling cucumbers, turnip greens, and mustard greens. They've also tried tomatoes, but tomatoes are not as productive out here. Quote, you can grow them, but this just isn't the place where you're going to see fields and fields of tomatoes, end quote, Chad said. The Andersons don't only sell their own produce at their farm stand. Quote, we work with a large community of farmers, end quote, Jessica said. St. Lawrence, Coyanosa, Lubbock, Seminole, and Brownfield are just a few of the places where family farms sell produce to the Andersons so that Midlanders can get fresh Texas-grown produce. So fresh, in fact, that on Friday, they were selling watermelons from Coyanosa, picked that very morning. The Andersons also sell produce from Kingsburg Orchards in California, which is where they source peaches, plums, nectarines, and apricots, the latter of which is a blessing for one Midlander. Cynthia Keener bought as many apricots as she could get Friday. Quote, I got a big box of them, end quote, she said. They'll be used for an old family apricot cobbler recipe that hasn't been made in many years. Cynthia's daughter alerted her to Anderson Farm Market, and on an unseasonably cool Friday afternoon, her three-year search for quality apricots ended. And the best part for Cynthia? Quote, the Andersons can get me all the things I need, end quote, she said, adding that she's already put in an order for more produce. The growing season starts at the end of April or early May and runs until the first freeze, Jessica said. The Andersons hope to someday open their own permanent shop away from the roadside, but no matter what where they're located, they love what they do. Quote, farming is hard work, of course, end quote, Jessica said. Quote, but the dirt is good for your soul, end quote. Freedom fountains illuminate Midland's duck pond. The duck pond will shine brighter each night with the installation of the Freedom Fountains. The City of Midland held a lighting ceremony of the Freedom Fountains on Wednesday night at the Wadley Barron Park, commonly known as the Duck Pond. The three fountains lit up in red, white, and blue in a patriotic symbol of Independence Day. Mayor Lori Blong said that the Duck Pond was chosen for the Freedom Fountains because it is already an iconic location with a view of the downtown skyline in the background. She added that the Duck Pond gives local families a place to enjoy and spend time together. Quote, this Freedom Fountain is an opportunity to highlight what is already a great asset for Midland, end quote, Blong said. District 4 City Council member Amy Stretcher Burks said that the council is focusing on quality of life initiatives. Quote, our Parks Department had the idea of having fountains that light up for different occasions, end quote, Stretcher Burks said. Blong said the Freedom Fountains are an example of the council's commitment to quality of place initiatives and thanked the Parks Department for working to get the fountains launched. The Freedom Fountains were an 8-month-long project. Some of the initiatives to improve quality of life include adding lighting and different features to parks and across the city as part of the strategic plan. Quote, our council believes that parks and quality of life initiatives are critical for the city of Midland as we grow and flourish, end quote, Blong said. Quote, we're so excited to have the opportunity to celebrate this together, end quote. The Freedom Fountains debuted in patriotic colors, but can be changed to different colors throughout the year. Blong said she's excited for the city to change the Freedom Fountain colors for different holidays and occasions. Quote, I think it's really neat to see Midlanders come together and celebrate something like this, end quote, Stretcher Burke said. Quote, I hope that people come and take pictures with their family, end quote.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.